Did you see my post about the Tamagotchis?
Yes, that was crazy.
I was shocked. And then I asked all my classes if they knew what Tamagotchis were, and like half of them did.
Maybe they're coming back because like 90s stuff is coming back.
They must be.
It's like my kids in the Pokemon cards.
I know, but kids like anime. It's
really They love anime now. It's weird. Like even like my pretty popular girls, like today, I brought up that I was watching Seven Deadly Sins, and all of them are like, oh, it's the best show. Let's go. You know, da 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 da. And even like, Lexi? You know, because Lexi's like really pretty. Not that pretty girls don't watch anime, because obviously I do, but like, you know, she's very like, you know, and she's like, oh yeah, it's the best show. And I was like, and like, all the like pretty, normal, average, popular girls.
Yeah, it's not like a clique.
No, it's like they all just watch it. And when I was in school, like, you like pyroed that, like you got it illegally from stores, like on weird sketchy sites, or you had to like go to a friend's house who had it, and it was this whole subculture. And I was like you don't even know, but like we had to go through to watch anime. If you watched anime, you were automatically weird.
It is foreign to me, anime.
It is definitely a way to connect with your students. Woo!
I know, now I'm like, gosh, now I need to find anime. But she walked in with that Tamagotchi around her neck, and I was like, are you wearing a Tamagotchi? And she was like, yeah. Like, she was, like, surprised I knew what it was.
I'm like, I'm of the Tamagotchi. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't even cool enough to have Tamagotchi. I had the knockoff Gigapet.
Oh, I had Gigapet. Yeah, that sounds good. I was like, I never had a name brand thing.
No, me either. I was like, I can't have the Tamagotchi, but I'll have the cheaper one, the Gigapet. And I took care of that thing.
Mine always died.
Now,
okay, Beth. Let's talk about Beth. Let's talk about how obsessed I am with Beth. And now,
yeah, let's talk. Okay, so you'd never met Beth, and then
you're
damn rolling hot.
And now I'm like Facebook stalking her. Just kidding. I'm not doing that. Cut that out.
What did you love about Beth?
I love, she's from up north, I guess. I love a good, abrasive northern girl. And I mean, highest compliment I could give somebody, just to the point, straight shooter, loud in the best way, and just she was so stinking hilarious and had this crazy life adventure. Her life's like a novel.
Yeah, she has done a lot. I always forget how much she's done.
So I loved her, and at the end of our talk, I was getting like goosebumps. No, there was some like smash the patriarchy vibes going on. I was here for it.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I loved that too. It was a very girl power episode and mom power episode.
Yeah. If you're here for ghosts, the paranormal, story of a young girl being told no you can't and her saying yes I can, and other shenanigans, it's the episode for you, our first paranormal Mom Notes episode.
My cat Coco is going to be like a permanent resident in this little like interview. I'm just going to show that. She's probably like going to show you her butt. No, I'm really sorry.
That's well, welcome Beth and Kat to Mom Notes. We're so happy you're here.
Wait, did you have a story about running over an animal? Were you about to say something?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't run over one in a while. That'll happen tomorrow, I'm sure.
So you, this really isn't, I mean, this works, but Beth, where you grew up, you are from Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
Was it more rural, like farm life? Because Sarah now lives on farm life, and we were just talking about.
So I grew up in the part of Pennsylvania that no one realized exists. And so I grew up in the northeast corner, at the end of the Poconos and the beginning of the Shawangunks. I can say Shawangunks. I can't even spell it. And the Shawangunks are actually a New York mountain range, and it's literally right on the border of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And it's very rural. My graduating class was like 100 kids, and that was the biggest ever. And we were the only high school in the county. So I had my first teaching job in Dover, Delaware. I taught for Capital School District.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was teaching there from 2000 till 2006.
So you taught there, Beth? You taught in Delaware? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so our paths have crossed. We've probably been in the same building at the same time.
Wow.
Probably. Whoa. Yeah. Small world.
Full circle. All right, wait. So tell us the haunted. How do you know
So when I first got there, I was like fresh out of college, like eyes wide open. I'm going to save the world. Mm-hmm. What happened to her? Anyway. I don't know. And I was like the young person, where everybody else had been there for like 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And I mean, every single person had been there for 20 plus years. I was one of two band directors in the middle school, and the middle school was only like two grade levels. But it was a huge, huge program.
Wow.
There were like 100 kids per grade level at each band program, all the way like up through the high school. It was ginormous. And when like the high school had two directors, and the feeder fifth and sixth grade school had like two directors. And so there were just a ton of us. And here I was like the baby. And they taught me all the things, and they showed me all the things, and they told me all the stories, as you do. And so they told me like that the auditorium was haunted, and I was like, and I kind of sort of believe in that kind of thing anyway. So I was like, okay. And then I don't know. I remember the first time that it kind of like caught me off guard, I was leaving at night, and I was the only one kind of there, and I was locking all the doors, and as you do. And there was this huge crash in the auditorium, and I'm like,
mm-mm.
I'm like,
nope.
What?
Nope.
So, I'm like 20 nothing and stupid. And so do I go and check it out? Of course I go and check it. Of course I go and check it out.
And 20 so, nothing and stupid.
And there's nothing there whatsoever. But I go and I turn the lights off. And the only way to turn the lights off was to like turn them off at the breaker. Cause the auditorium acoustically was fabulous and everything else, but the electrical system was like straight out of 1960. And so you had to turn it off on the breaker. And I walked halfway across the stage. I turned it off on the breaker, right? Walked halfway across the stage and the light comes on.
Nope. Nope. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Whoa.
And so like, I was out of there. And so that kind of thing was like pretty much par for the course that everybody would tell you about. And there was, we actually had a school SRO like way back then. And he was a really sweet old man. His name was Sarge, and he used to play piano.
Aww.
And I remember he would like go into the auditorium, like, and just, if he had like a free moment or he just needed to unwind, like he'd go in the auditorium and he'd randomly start playing, and it was all jazz and it was all by ear, and he was brilliant. And so, it wasn't unusual to hear that. And so Sarge would tell me stories about all kinds of things too. And the weirdest part about that is one day, again, I was like locking up and everything else, and I heard the piano playing in the auditorium. So I go in the auditorium to say goodnight to Sarge, and Sarge is not there, and there's no one there, and all the lights were off.
Oh my gosh.
Fast.
No, okay, so can you talk us through, because I'm genuinely curious. You went to college where?
Mm-hmm. Lebanon Valley College, which is, it's in Pennsylvania. It's right outside Hershey.
Yes. Okay. I remember you telling me that. And then, okay. So then what?
And then, I graduated, obviously. And I applied to like a bunch of places, and I got the job in Delaware. Moved down to Delaware. That was fun because I had the job interview down there, and they're like, and they called me back. And they called me back to the school, and they said, can you start now? And I was like, now? And I'm like, yeah, now. I don't live here. They're like, we have people that'll put you up. And literally, they had like five different teachers that were willing to put me up.
Wait, was it middle of the school year?
No, it was like the beginning of the school year. But they had to hire me by 3 o'clock that day, and I had to start that day. or they couldn't put me on a full year contract.
Because
that was the first teacher work day.
Oh, it was late.
Was it middle school band or high school band?
Yeah, and so it was middle school band. And so like, so I ended up like randomly staying with some teachers that I had no idea who they were.
That's a good thing. Get to know your
colleagues. Thankfully, packed extra underwear. Because I had left work like the night before the interview and I drove part way and I stayed with my brother and I spent the night at my brother's and then I changed and got up like the next day and drove down the rest of the way for my interview. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm that type of person that like packs a little bit extra when I'm packing stuff and I have like one extra change of clothes. And so, and then I ran out to Walmart. And I taught my first day in my interview suit, and I taught my second day in what I found at Walmart.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's an amazing first year story.
Yeah.
So,
okay, that was so you found a place to live, I guess.
I did. I found an apartment, yes, eventually.
So how long were you there, and then where'd you go?
I met Steve when we were down there. He was stationed down there in the Air Force. And so I taught there for 5.5 years and we got married and all the good things. And then they said, you're moving. And, so then we moved to England and we lived in England for 4 years. And, I taught in England at the Dodd School, the Department of Defense Dependent School. So it was the military kids on base. And I did, my first teaching job, you'll be so impressed with me. My very first job that I got there was middle of the year because we left in like February. And they needed a high school person. And so the very first concert that I conducted as the high school person was a choir.
Yay!
And that was also my last choir.
First and last.
I loved England. If we could have like stayed there and it wasn't an 8-hour flight home, I would have been a very happy person.
It is lovely.
Did you like the teaching gig?
Not the high school gig. But I think that might have just been like what I walked into.
Right.
Like clearly I did not walk into the greatest situation. And so anyway, they had actually already filled the position. Like it was a long-term sub job. They had filled the position for the following school year. And so then, I did a whole lot of subbing at the middle school and at the high school. And then the middle school band director retired. And so then I took that job and I did that for only a year because then our orders were up and we were going to be moving. And they didn't want to hire me for like just a few months.
Yeah.
So, and in the middle of all that, Noah was born. And then. And so, and then they moved us again. And so then we moved from there to Abilene, Texas.
You had a baby in England.
Yes.
How was having a baby in England? I need to like, was it totally fine and normal?
Like, yeah. I have tons of interesting stories about the birth, but that's beside the point.
Yes, first stories.
I'm not going to get too grody.
Oh, I love a good birth story.
Do you want the birth story? It's a lot.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm here. I'm here for it. We're going to talk about marching band later. We'll get
back to teaching later.
So,
we will merge this and say, at this point, were you a teacher or you were a sub?
I was subbing.
Okay.
And I would start teaching the following year.
Okay.
So Noah was still like pretty little. So Noah was born, he was a June baby. So he was actually not doing anything. And he was born on Friday the 13th. And so on Wednesday, I went in for my like regular 39-week exam. And I only know it was Wednesday because he was born Friday the 13th and you don't forget those things. And so I went in and when you go, if you're like, the military life is different. I very rarely saw the same doctor. Steve did not go with me to appointments. He was not like, he went to maybe 4. I wasn't high risk, so they didn't see the need to send him. And so I went in for my regular 39-week appointment. Everything was fine. Steve wasn't with me. And I don't know, some nurse was like doing all the tests. And I know that sounds cavalier when I'm like some nurse, but I never got to know them because it was always somebody different. And so the nurse is like doing the exam and she's like, I need to call the doctor. And I was like,
tell me what's happening.
Like, right? It flips you out. And so the doctor comes in. Of course, I've never met the doctor before. And the doctor comes in and she starts examining me. And she's like, okay, where's your husband?
Oh. And I'm okay, like, what?
My husband's at work. What's going on? And she goes, okay, but he's like here in England. Yeah. He's here in England. Okay, cool. Get dressed. I was like,
what?
Okay. But you can't, like, I can't argue. Like, she outranks my husband and he needs to have a job. So anyway, so the military life is really weird. So do as she says and get dressed. And she goes, so I need you to go upstairs. We're going to run some tests and everything else. She goes, the baby is in what we call failure to thrive, which essentially means that there's nothing wrong, but he's not gaining weight. He's losing weight at like 39 weeks when they're supposed to be gaining weight.
Right.
So I'm like, all right. So I trucked my little self upstairs and they hooked me up to all these tests and everything else. And so, and I can't reach Steve because he can't access his cell phone because he's working. And they're literally like, it's not an emergency. Don't call him. Okay, cool. So, like 2 hours later.
I would be flipping out.
I'm totally calm.
I'm good. Like you kind of like just like push yourself through it. And then I have to drive down the most dangerous road in England, like half an hour later, like half an hour home. And so they settled the inducement for Friday, the 13th, which was a little bit for me to unpack, like personally. And there was nothing wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with him. The baby was in no immediate danger and all because he wasn't gaining weight. And true story, when they induced me, he was like, and he was born, he was 5 pounds, 13 ounces. He was teeny.
Well, and you know, what's interesting teeny. Is I was just thinking as you were talking, he's little now, still he's little.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He's still like we have never like quite like, we haven't gotten past that. And so
he's little and mighty.
Yeah, he's just a little and mighty, and we survived it. But it was terrifying when I was going through it.
Yeah.
So we get to the flash forward to Friday. We get to the hospital and being induced and all the things, and the doctor's like, "Hi, I'm so and so. Nice to meet you." And so it's just like, I'm sure it was really weird because then when I had my second, I went to a civilian doctor and I was like, "Dude, like you actually know my name. That's cool." And so it was very different. And so the doctors come in and they bring us into the temporary labor and delivery ward. This is the funny part, I swear. So we get to the temporary labor delivery ward and they walk us into this teeny tiny little room. And there's room for like the anesthesiologist and the doctor and the nurse and Steve and me on the bed. And that's literally it. And I'm like, why is it so small? And the nurse, who I didn't know, says, "Oh, it's because it's the old psych ward." And she looks
Girl,
at Steve.
She doesn't miss.
It gets better. She doesn't miss a beat. She looks at my husband and she goes, "And there's bars on the window, so you can't escape."
Okay.
I can do the breakfast for dinner tip.
Oh yeah, talk about your omelets.
Okay, well, they're not my omelets. They are my husband's omelets. He makes really good omelets. But I think doing breakfast for dinner is a quick, like, oh crap, what are we going to do for dinner kind of thing. Because you have leftover veggies in your drawer. You have leftover maybe meat. You have cheese, usually. If you have a lot of eggs, you've got milk. And then, like, put it with something fun. Like, we did rice with ours and then, like, hot sauce. And we've done, like, just, you know, roasted potatoes before with it and dinner served. So yeah, omelets, any kind of breakfast, egg sandwich for dinner. That's my recipe, I guess, tip note.
Breakfast for dinner. Alex's family used to call it silly supper.
Oh, that's cute.
And they would do breakfast for dinner, silly supper. And they would be so excited.
Okay, can we call it that on the Insta, silly supper?
Yay. So how did you go about finding, whenever I think about, I wanted to teach abroad for a while. Did you just look on the base where you got a job?
So I had started when I went there, I had started my master's when I was in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a master's program through the base in England. And while I was there, One of the people that I was in class with was like, oh, by the way, they need some subs at the middle school. And I was like, cool, cool, cool. And I was about ready to go. And when I went to the middle school to fill out the little sub application, they were like, oh, by the way, they need a high school band director or music teacher, because it was like all encompassing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then
just one of those faded connections, you know. Did you always want to do middle school?
I did a lot. So after I left the base, after we left England, we moved to Texas. And in Texas, when I got there, I was pregnant. With Josh, my second. And so I ended up getting a job at a private elementary school doing pre-K through fifth grade. And so I've essentially done pre-K through high school and just about anything there is with music. And so when Steve retired and we were in Texas, he's like, okay, well, I love you. You've supported me for all these years. You've dealt with all the moves and everything that the military has thrown to you. Go find a job, honey.
Yay. And
my husband is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go one more time on the record. My husband is amazing.
I love it.
So
gotta give props to these great husbands.
He's amazing. And so I looked around to different things and I was like, I had to think really hard. What did I enjoy the most? And hands down, 100%, I actually really love teaching middle school kids. I love teaching band. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I really set my sights on it. And that's just kind of like, there were jobs that I probably could have had that I turned down. Or I just didn't even apply to, because I was in the position that I didn't have to go to one place. I could open myself up, because I'm the one who figured out that we were going to end up in Roanoke. I had multiple job interviews and I had different job offers, and we were like, this is the best one. And this is best for our family. I had most opportunities for Steve after he retired. And so that's how we ended up here. But a big part of it was I wanted middle school band again.
Oh.
So yes, middle school band, 100%.
What is it about middle school? Middle school band.
Well, obviously the band part, that was easy. The middle schoolers are just a trip. They are, I mean, there's no other word for them. They are at times incredibly gifted and talented, and they can amaze you with what like they can do ability wise. Mm-hmm. And also with their insight and their maturity and all of that. And then they're just like fifth graders and can barely tie their shoe and string together a sentence the next moment. I just love that they run the gamut, and they are, to me, like I work a lot with high schoolers too. The elementary schoolers are just, I don't know. I need to hold their hand too much. And I just, it's no. But the middle schoolers are just so open, and they are willing to be silly and to try crazy things. Like I don't have to convince them. Like I have to convince the high school kids.
Yes.
They buy into it and they're mm-hmm. willing to try it, and they don't know it's hard.
Mm.
Like they're just learning to play an instrument and be in an ensemble and all of that. So it's all hard. Mm-hmm. And so they have no idea that if you tell them to do this, cause it's hard, that it's actually hard, cause everything's hard. So they just, I just lie to them. I'm like, no, it's not hard. It's fine. Just practice it more and it'll be fine. It'll be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. They're silly and they're fun and they buy into all of my crazy, and I just like them.
Do you know that is true, that the stage of development of your brain when your self-actualization, whatever, solidifies is when you're 12, 13. So seventh grade-ish.
Yes.
When you decide, I'm good at this, I'm bad at this, I like this, I don't like this. And it's really hard to reverse it after that point.
Yeah.
Oh, so like if that. Someone tells you when you're 13, you're bad at math, for all you know, you're bad at math and that's it. I mean, it can be like worked on, but it takes like a really special teacher or person or mentor. And like, yeah, that's like the brain development stage. So those middle school teachers, man, you got an important job.
What's the hardest thing about middle school band?
It's a lot of like the difference between a sixth grader and an eighth grader. A sixth grade beginner and an eighth grader to me is so much bigger and broader than the difference between like a ninth grader and a 12th grader.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can get a really good ninth grader that will like outplay a 12th grader or outsing a 12th grader. We've all had those kids.
Yeah.
Where in sixth grade, a beginner is never going to outplay an eighth grader.
Yeah.
Like hands down, it's just not going to happen. So the amount of like the breadth of what I'm doing in a daily basis to me is really, really hard. And then the other part about middle school that's so hard is the fact that they are just so off the wall and I never know who I'm going to get. And so that it's challenging and I like it. Like I like the interpersonal like part of that I don't really know which kid's going to walk into my door and what they're going to throw at me and who's going to be today. Is it going to be the depressed child? Is it going to be the hyper child? Is it going to be the happy child? Is it going to be the kid that like just had a fight with their best friend and oh my God, the end is near. And like you get that in middle school and high school for sure. But in middle school, I mean, it's the end is coming.
Yeah.
And by fourth period, the end has already been over. The fun's done.
Yeah.
Wait, so what was your relationship to band? Like your background with band and how you got into that?
I don't know. I was always in band. I got into band when I was in fourth grade and because my brother was not.
Okay.
I got it.
I was the younger child, can you tell? And so and I don't know, I just always really liked it and enjoyed it. And so it was one of those things that was like I knew I'd always wanted to be a teacher and I just couldn't quite figure out what I wanted to teach. And I don't know, just kept at it.
And you're low brass, right?
Yeah, what's your instrument?
I majored on euphonium and I minored on trombone and tuba.
So we need to talk about the girl powerness here. You are a lady in a man's world with low brass and marching band and band directing.
And just, yes. Yeah, band.
Yeah, let's just
female band director. I know you and one other. in the district you're in especially. Yeah.
Yeah, district six is a little
and rough. A mom. Okay, not
and a mom. Yeah, because the other one I know is not a mom.
Yeah, a female band director is you know uncommon anyways. But then and a mom,
you're like a winged unicorn.
Yeah,
like a female band director is a unicorn. You like a flying one.
I wish it gets so much more done around my house. As a low brass player, as a female in a low brass world, you kind of grow up with the guys. And there is definitely that. And so you just sort of get used to hanging with the guys, which I think has been advantageous for me because, and this is maybe showing my age because this was how we communicated like 20 years ago, like the raunchy jokes. And the little, like they were all raunchy and fart jokes all the time.
That's still true.
Yeah. I have two boys. It's still true. 100%. They're all fart 100%. Jokes. 100%. And so, but the raunchy, what really are truly inappropriate jokes to tell around a woman, just kind of like, all right, I just have to roll with this because it's me and a bunch of guys and this is just what they're going to do. And so you learn to kind of roll with being one of the guys and all of that. And I think that always kind of helped me for sure. There were times it really, really upset me.
Yeah.
For sure. And it was, in high school when I decided that this was what I wanted to do and I wanted to go into, not my band director, but another music teacher actually told me, he said, yeah, you can't do that because women aren't band directors.
And you
all can't see our faces right now.
Oh my gosh. I cannot believe he had the balls.
Look,
oh.
1996 was a different world.
That's, yeah. Women aren't band directors, my butt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I certainly couldn't do it playing my instrument. Oh, that was the other piece to it. Gosh. Yes.
Good for you for doing it anyway.
Whoever you are. Woo!
Yeah, take that.
That's the name.
I took it as a challenge. And that's, it was like, all right, tell me I can't do it one more time. And I'm going to do it twice and I'm going to take a selfie. Yeah.
I am so proud of you. My like womanhood, sisterhood is like tingling.
That's not to say it wasn't 100% with a lot of self-doubt. Like yeah. that was a sentiment echoed a lot. And I can only say that was negated. My mom is an amazing, amazing woman who never made me feel that way. My father never made me feel that way. I had a really tight-knit group of girlfriends in college, and we were a bunch of women, and we were all going to be band directors, and we were all going to take over the daggone world. Mm-hmm. And so, and I had a fantastic low brass teacher, and he was this like tiny little Irish man, and I love Jim to pieces. He is like one of my favorite people on the whole planet, and he was just like, nope, you're a woman, you're gonna do it. And he never gave me an excuse. I'll never forget, we had a low brass rehearsal, and here I was like 18 years old, weighing next to nothing, and I had this like 40-pound instrument that I'm supposed to stand up and hold for like a 4-hour rehearsal standing up. And I was like, at no point did I sit down. And it was never expected that I was going to sit down. And the professor looked at me at the end of rehearsal and he's like, why didn't you ask for a chair? And I said,
like nobody else. He didn't say that to anybody else.
No, he said, it's me. And I said, the guys didn't ask for a chair. And he said, well, that was their stupid. Like anybody could have asked for a chair. And I was like, well, I didn't know. And I was a freshman. I was really like really trying to show myself and everything else. And I was so sore for like, and then the next day I had like a lesson and I couldn't stand up in my lesson. I was that sore and my arms were so sore. And he's just like, sit down, it's fine. And he's like, look, you're a woman and that gives you an advantage over the boys that they don't realize. And he said, so you can't stand there and hold that for that long. Who cares? You have an advantage. And so 100%, I think throughout like 4 years of college, I was, and throughout a lot of my life, I was completely surrounded by very, very supportive, impactful women. And that was huge. And my first teaching job, I'll never forget. I went down to my first teaching job and we had our first, you know, district band director meeting. And the first person they introduced me to was Peggy. And Peggy was the middle school band director. And she was a trombone player at like a different district. And she had like 20 years on me. And it was like, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And she was just like, she looked at one of the male band directors and she's like, you're not going to tell a nasty joke in her presence, not with me. And that taught me a lot of things. One of the things it taught me was that I always have allies. And number two is that's the kind of person I need to be for other young directors. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was, to some extent, it's tough and it was always tough and it made me be tough, but I had a lot more backing than it looked on the surface. And I think when you have a community of women that backs you up and supports you, in a lot of ways it can negate the negative presence and the negative comments that are coming at you from men and from society. And I've, the one thing in like the years that I've been on this journey is that women lift each other up. And if men are lifting us up, that's great. But the number one person who can lift up another woman is a woman. Mm-hmm. And as long as we just keep doing that, then they don't have a chance.
Okay, I'm ready to talk about the Monster marching band. Marching band being married and still loving your spouse a lot and having offspring.
Yeah, and two boys.
Yeah. Okay, so go. How do we do that?
I'm not sure. Yes. It's a lot. And Alex is like 25% boss and like 25% colleague and like 50% baby brother that I feel like I need to take care of.
So real.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It is. We get along really well though. Like, and there's like, we get along really well. There's times we pissed each other off and I'm sure like he's come home like legit mad at me. I know I've come home legit mad at him. And so, like, it's happened. Because marching band is a lot. I say that there's no emotions, but there are. And so to begin with, marching band is, first off, it's not really my baby, it's his baby. There was only one year that it was my baby. The rest of the time, it's really Schmidt's baby. And I'm just there to guide the ship and keep him from getting fired. And so
true. It's very true. And and take care. But you're so good with the, like the babies and the rookies and the, and the girls, you know, weeks the girls have.
Didn't he tell you? Okay, so like the first year that I was on staff, these girls, like, we're out in the field in the middle of nowhere, and these girls are coming up to me like, Mrs. Williams? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, I need to go home. Why do you need to go home? Because I need a thing. And I was like, oh, well, surely it's in the med bag.
No,
it's not in the med bag.
Of course it's not.
No, of course it was not in the med bag.
This is stuff I carry with me on every field trip, right?
Right. Yeah. And literally,
I have piles in my classroom.
I'm going to embarrass.
In my office drawer. Oh, here. Right. Mm-hmm. You need to go to the
embarrass. I have
Alex.
A bag for them. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to embarrass ready for it. He says to me, he goes, don't they know they're going to get that?
Alex! It for y'all. Alex!
Look,
bless it.
Flash forward 12 years from now, I'm so gonna remind him that he said that.
Yeah. When you have to go pick up your daughter at school.
Yeah, when she's crying because right. Yeah, and make sure he does it, Nicole.
Yeah. I'm gonna make sure he does it. So anyway, I literally went out that afternoon at lunch break and came back with like a jumbo pack of pads. And they all went in the med bag. And he opens it up and he's like, why are these all in here? I have no regrets. Anyway.
So talk to us about that schedule and all the things.
All the momming, all the wifing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So it works to some regard because my husband's work schedule is very like down at that time of year. Does that make sense? Like mm-hmm. right now is a terrible time for him work-wise.
Yeah.
Between about January and April is like, he is nonstop. And at that time of year, like everything is sort of wrapping up and because he works on a fiscal calendar. So everything is wrapping up and things are much better for him. And so he can kind of take over the bulk of the parenting. And I think that if things were different, the whole thing would fall apart. But he can take over a big bulk of the parenting, which is helpful. We just make it work. When he was in the military, he would be gone for weeks, months at a time. And we just had to deal with it. And he would, he would like come home and be like leaving, and we'd have to deal with that. So we both kind of figured out that in order to make the careers work, we had to be flexible and we had to work on it. And so my husband is amazing. I can't say that enough. But he does, he picks up the slack when I can't. And there's things that are really important to us as a family, and like eating together at dinner is super important. As a kid growing up, that was a thing that we always did. And so we still do it. It's just on Tuesdays and Thursdays when I have marching band, my husband's the one who cooks it. And I'm rolling in nasty and sweaty and dirty. And I sit down at the table and wash my hands, sit down at the table. And I just start like eating like warmed up food. And normally I can make it before the kids are done. I don't always make it like when they sit down, but I can usually make it before they're done. And so, and you just make time to catch up and make it work. The schedule is a little crazy. Friday nights, and like when you get in the heat of it and it's like there's games every Friday and competitions every Saturday, it gets a little grueling. It gets a little hard. We get a little snippy. The kids are actually really awesome about it because they're really proud.
Aww.
So they go and they tell everybody, and my mom's a band director.
That's so sweet.
And she's doing all the things. And so they've kind of lived with this long enough that this is just what happens. And we've always kind of approached parenthood and life as like, as long as one of us makes it to the stuff, then we're good. And the kids feel loved because my parents both worked and they couldn't both make it to every single thing that we did. My dad was in the Navy Reserves when I was a kid, and there was a concert he missed every single year because it just happened to always fall at that time.
Right.
And I was never mad at him. It was just, well, this is your job and this is what's going on. It's not like you're choosing not to do this. This is just what you have to do. And there's a big difference. It's like when I have to give up that, then I give it up. But when I choose to, it's a little different. And so I don't choose to give up things. Like when it's not marching band season, then I choose to give up the things and I make all the time for my kids. And we just balance it. Somebody is always at the game. Somebody is always at the school concert. Somebody is always making dinner and keeping an eye on the kids and making the things happen. It's just whose turn is it? And during marching band season, it's typically not my turn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's how we've made it work. There's times I pick up the kids and drag them along with us. And they suffer through a 90-degree heat marching band practice.
I've hung out with them at some of those.
You have. I have pictures. And so sometimes that's, and actually at times it's almost harder because they're miserable and they're bored.
Yeah.
And so whenever somebody's like, oh yeah, just bring your kids to rehearsal, it's great. It's like, is it?
Yeah. But you didn't do marching band when they were little, did you?
No, I did not. I didn't do it when they were little. So when I started, Noah was first grade and Josh would have been 4. So they weren't itty bitty babies. They were old enough to kind of hold their own and take care of things a little bit. And at this point, like Noah is 12 and 7th grade. So by the way, when you talk about like middle school, like I'm in the mix of that.
All the ways.
24/7. Oh, it's a lot. Yeah. And Josh is 4th grade. And so, you know, like before we had this interview, we ate dinner together and I got up and I was like, all right, mom's got to go get in her pajamas. Then we're going to go do this interview. Who's doing the dishes, children?
Yeah.
Not it.
Yeah. The kids doing dishes. Looking forward to that.
It's great. Look, they do all the things.
That's going to be awesome.
I came home from work today and the lunch dishes were washed and the laundry was folded and it was put away. It's a great thing.
Good job. You're
like an angel chorus. Like
it's so, but it's not like, it doesn't always happen, but normally if I like start it and I put it on like the cute little timer, like Noah gets it out and he throws it in the dryer. As long as I just have to make sure like it's not going to be something that's going to get shrunk.
So, yeah. So little coaching.
Yeah. Like it's always like, all right, what am I washing today that Noah can throw in the dryer? Towels.
You can do it. You can't mess it up.
Sheets.
So, because you guys are far from family too, both you and Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how we are too. So it has to be, like you said, one, or it can't be like grandma or grandpa. Like one of us has to do the picking up or the go to the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so normally they do like after school care after school. This year is COVID and that doesn't quite work the same, but normally we work that out. And we have an excellent support group with our neighbors and our friends. And I remember there was one point, I think it was like last year or 2 years ago. I don't know. It's all like a blur. But like the school let out early because of flood day. Maybe that was, I don't remember. But they had a flood day.
Oh, the bit. I remember that. And there was like the hurricanes. Yeah.
It was one of the hurricanes.
Yeah.
And so I think it was like it feels like it was 6 years ago, but I don't think it was. And I had to like call my neighbors because the county did the terrible thing and they went, we're releasing now. And I had like my heart just like thumped into my stomach. And I'm like, I have to go now. I'm like in my principal's office, like I have to go now. And she's like, yeah, you said your kids are being dismissed early. Like, no, they're dismissing now. And she's like, who dismisses now? And I'm like, you want to see the text? And so, and then I couldn't get home because the roads were flooded. Uh-huh. And so I'm like calling my neighbors and they, sure enough, like there was like two cars waiting up at the bus stop for them.
Oh, that's good.
So you find your little support group and you find your family, that's not like not that even in my air quotes. Yeah, but like you find your group and you find your crew. And I've never really done anything close to family. Like growing up as a kid, we weren't really close to family either. And in college, that was far enough away from mom and dad. You know what I mean? And there was always just find your little crew and find your little place. And that was, I mean, that's how we got through living in a foreign country. And that's how we got through living in Texas, which at times felt like a foreign country. But that's just how we get through. You just find your little family and your little crew that will take care of people. And that's how you do it. And there's never been a moment that I've looked at Alex and said, hey, I need to bring the kids to rehearsal, that the answer was no. And it's been almost never that I went, I need to make this soccer game or this whatever, that the answer hasn't been like, go be with your kids. That's always been the response. And finding, I don't think I could have done marching band with a different head director that was not understanding that I'm there as the assistant and as the help and not a replacement for you. And when my family calls me, like that's where the family needs to be. Like that's the priority. And so 100% that's been the only way I've made it through. And I give a lot of props to the women who are the head directors who can't sit there and say, by the way,
hey, you got a little taste. She took over for Alex Sarah when we had Aubrey. Because we had her at the end of September.
Yeah.
That's right. Really good planning for Alex.
Yeah.
As soon as we found out the due date, that was his first, you know, that was his first thought.
Oh, joyous day.
Yeah. I knocked over one glass when he told us. Did he tell you that?
Do what?
I knocked over a whole glass of water when he told us.
Aww.
Like, you knocked her up when?
I was so excited for him, them. It was great. I love it.
And then she was like, oh, crap.
And then.
Yeah, I used the PG word.
Oh, yeah. No, there was no PG words.
Yeah.
Yeah, no PG words came out of my mouth.
I'm going to brag on her for a second, but she took them to assessment by herself. She ran all those rehearsals by herself, and they got their first ever superior.
Girl power. Girl power. Yes.
And I will tell you, the whole time he was out was like a different eye-opening experience, 100%. That was wild.
I'm going to get real personal here because this is on my radar. Is there any marital strife with the marching band conversation? Like, does Steve ever come to you and say, you know, I'm getting frustrated. This is a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how can it not?
Right. So how do you work through that?
So some of it is figuring out what is causing the strife and how you can eliminate it. So for example, we hired housekeepers that come to my house every 2 weeks to clean my house.
We do that
and
too.
It is an expense. But it is like one less thing off the to-do list.
The best money. I said that today. I was like, this is probably the thing I'm happiest we spend our money on. I know that sounds so luxurious and like, but it just as people keeping a home, having kids.
Well, if you're both working.
Yeah, both working.
Come on, something's got to give.
Yeah, take it off the list. We're supporting a local business. Like this is like a small local business. It's you come home to something you don't have to deal with, you know, you don't have to do or think about cleaning the bathroom. It's just nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. If you can.
Yeah. Whatever makes your house function.
Right.
Whether it is like, if it is just one simple little thing that you can take off your to-do list, whether it is paying somebody else to mow the lawn or, paying somebody else to clean your house, paying somebody else to do the grocery shopping. What can you take off your plate? What meaningless chore will make it easier to get through all the work crap?
Or just let it be. I mean, if you,
Or just let it be. Like, and if you can't let it be, because there's some things you can't let be, like you have to have groceries. But if you can just like get through whatever it is, then just get through what it is. And there's nothing, I've never felt that there's like a shame in paying somebody to do something that you just don't have the time to do or are not willing to do. You are employing a local business.
Mm-hmm.
You are helping somebody else and you're helping yourself. And so anybody who's looking at two working parents and kids and how do I make this work? Like, look at your life and look at what chores you might be able to outsource and find a way to make that happen. And is it expensive? Is it a luxury? Yes. Can I afford it? Thankfully, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you think that helps? Like, so that's where he's coming from, is just doing all the house things. So if you can take one thing off his plate.
I still end up cleaning. they only come every other week. So I end up like, you can't have two boys and not clean your bathroom every week.
Yeah. But like for me, it's the time not together.
Oh.
So for Steve, he's not really thinking. He's more
active. He sees that too. And usually it hits in the middle of the season, like end October. Of September, beginning of October is where it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of time away and it's the grind has hit really bad and all of those things. And there's ways to make it better. For us, we live reasonably far away from the high school. It's like a good 20, 30 minute drive. So it's not like he's just going to drive on over there with the kids just to have dinner with us
because
that's like a good hour round trip. And it's just across town, but you know, a Friday night traffic is bananas. So the time away from family hits, we typically kind of, I don't know, we just sort of deal with it. And then when it's all over, it's a little bit of like, oh God, how in the world did we do that for that long? But at the same time, like, I also, like, he's military. So we spent months with him in a different country.
Right,
we never not know it. Yeah, like, I had no idea what time he was coming. When, what week, what month, if he was coming home. And so we kind of, like, I think we both went into that with, like, into the marriage with that mindset that that was going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so marching band, I hate to say, is kind of an extension of that, but it kind of is, in some regard. But we both seem to understand that this is just a temporary thing and we get through it. And then it eases up. And that's a little bit different for me than I'm sure it is for some of the high school directors, because when marching band ends, it ends. And then I get in a middle school mode, and middle school mode doesn't have all the stuff. You know, after marching band ends, I have like, oh, I have an all city concert. That's one night away. I can handle that. Oh, I have another I have a winter concert for my school. That's one night.
Like, no, it sets everything else into perspective.
Yeah. So it's sort of like calms down a lot after marching band ends. So I can, it's like, we can handle this because we know the end is in sight, sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a start and an end. It's not, this is forever.
Right, it's not forever, and it's a little different. And some of that is just, I remember at one point, I had actually been helping with the middle school musical for a while. And when Schmidt approached me about helping with the marching band, like, my husband flat out looked at me and he's like, you're going to do one or the other.
I used to
direct, like, head direct musicals in the spring, and he was head directing marching band in the fall. And so even though it balanced our busy seasons, we still, like, were passing ships. It was not good. So, yeah.
So I think it's really just a matter of figuring out, like, what is important and what is not important. And then how can you make it all work together? This is just me personally. I had, when I had first had Noah, there, I got asked a really inappropriate question, and I'm going to share that inappropriate question with y'all, because it's actually tempered me a lot and things. So right after I had Noah, and I, not right after I had Noah, but after I had Noah and I got offered this teaching job, one of Steve's friends who was, had a very different life plan than Steve and I did. He asked me, he said, so what's it like? Obviously Noah was going into daycare because I was going to go back to work. And he said, so what's it like to drop your kid off with total strangers all day? And I was like,
you said, moms already feel that.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Wow.
We have a lot of not so nice names for him, but anyway, but I said it, like, it took me a moment to, like, process this whole thing. And I said to him, and I said, I don't know that I could do it if I didn't love what I did, if I didn't find value in what I did, if I didn't get something out of that. And I do, I get something out of teaching. There's value in what I'm doing, and there's a benefit to what I'm doing more than just the financial portion. And as much as I can't stand that person for asking me that question, I think about that question a lot when I decide to do things in life. Is this really truly worth me leaving my kid with a stranger, or just in general, just me just leaving my kid or leaving my husband? And if I can't answer that in a way that satisfies me, I probably don't do it. In fact, there is no probably. I just don't. And so I think that's a lot of it. Like, do I as a person find value in this activity? And if the answer is yes, then that has a benefit. And if it makes me feel good, if it has meaning to me, if I enjoy it, if I love it, if I'm passionate about it, then I need to keep doing it. And it's worth the sacrifice.
Beth, thank you so much for coming and talking with us tonight. We had the best time. Both of us feel super empowered, like we can go conquer the world one rehearsal classroom practice at a time.
Yeah.
And we loved our chat with you. Thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Beth. And if you have an interesting story about anything that Beth talked about, whether you have your own haunted school story, or a story about a teacher telling you you couldn't do something and then you went ahead and did it anyway, we want to hear about it. So send us your mom notes to momnotespod@gmail.com, or you can instant message us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Bye from Mom Notes. Goodbye now. Goodbye. Alex, get out of here. I'm mad at you.
Why? What'd I do?
You add
the pads. The pads, Alex. The pads.
In my defense.
Oh, here we go.
Bad.
I think most men have that question.
Yes, that's true.
I think that's a lack of knowledge, man.
How old were you, Alex?
I was 24.
It was early.
Were you married to Nicole?
No, we weren't.
Yes, he was.
We were.
Okay, well then yes. Your defense is crumbling.
Yeah, I never knew.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Look,
I could see if he was not living with a woman.
I look back on it and I'm not proud. I'm just
We basically decided the first time Aubrey gets her period and she calls us to pick her up, you gotta go.
I feel like I'm gonna spend the next like
she'd be crying
10 to 12 years preparing myself for that exam. It will take every single day to get ready for that. Well, 32-year-old Alex apologizes to 24-year-old Alex.
That's fair. Okay, I'm not mad at you anymore.